Ever imagine getting in trouble with the law for like a Facebook post?
Oh,
You
yeah.
know, like something totally harmless.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what happened in this crazy case we're diving into today.
Yeah.
Packingham v. North Carolina.
Wow.
It went all the way to the Supreme Court. It had huge GE implications for free speech online.
Huge.
So we're going to break down this case piece by piece, look at both sides, and see how this ruling affects, you know, all of us.
That's a great idea because I think Packingham really gets at this key question that we're all dealing with now. Like, can we consider the internet a public square?
Right.
You know? And if so, what kind of limits can the government put on what we do online?
Yeah, totally. So let's start with Lester Packingham himself. He was a registered sex offender in North Carolina,
Okay.
and he made this Facebook post just celebrating getting out of a traffic ticket. Seems pretty innocent, right?
Right.
Well, it turns out that was actually illegal in North Carolina at the time.
Yeah, so North Carolina had this law banning registered sex offenders from using any commercial social networking websites. And we're not even talking about using these sites for illegal things, you know, like soliciting minors or anything like that. It was a blanket ban. Any access was completely forbidden.
Wow, that's a really broad law.
Yeah.
So how did this even end up in front of the Supreme Court?
Well, Packingham decided to challenge the law.
Okay.
He argued that it was violating his First Amendment right to free speech.
Makes sense.
And the Supreme Court thought this case was important enough to hear because it brought up some really crucial questions about how the First Amendment works, you know, in our digital world.
Yeah, for sure. So I know when the Supreme Court's reviewing a law like this, they use something called intermediate scrutiny. What does that even mean?
Right, so intermediate scrutiny, that's a legal test that courts use to decide whether a law restricting speech is actually constitutional.
Okay.
To pass that test, the government has to show that the law is specifically designed to serve an important government interest. So it's not just about whether the government has a good reason for the law, it also has to be the least restrictive way to achieve that goal.
Got it. So North Carolina, they were arguing that this law was absolutely necessary to protect children from online predators,
Right.
which, you know, is obviously a super important goal.
Absolutely.
But what was wrong with their reasoning?
So the court, they totally agree that protecting children is super important, but they said North Carolina's law was way too broad. Like Justice Kennedy, he wrote the majority opinion and he compared it to banning someone from all parks just because there's a chance they might stalk someone in one.
Interesting.
Yeah, so you know, like using a sledgehammer when you really need a scalpel.
Right.
The court was basically saying states can't just erase someone's whole online presence without even looking into other options that might be less restrictive.
I see.
And it's important to remember, you know, Justice Kennedy, he called social media the most important places for the exchange of views today. And just think about how much of our lives are online these days. It's how we connect with our friends and family, share our ideas, and even find jobs. To cut someone off from all of that is a really big deal.
Yeah, that makes total sense. You can't just erase someone from the internet without affecting their ability to, you know, live their life and express themselves.
Exactly. And that leads us to another really interesting part of this case, the concurring opinion.
Now, hold on. Before we jump into that, can you explain what a concurring opinion even is? You know, for those of us who aren't legal
Oh,
experts.
yeah, sure. So a concurring opinion, that's when a judge agrees with the outcome of the case. So in this case, they agree that North Carolina's law was unconstitutional,
Okay.
but they agree for different reasons than the majority.
Interesting.
Yeah, so in Packingham, Justice Alito, he wrote this concurring opinion, and he agreed that North Carolina's law was too broad, but he was also kind of worried about calling the entire internet a public forum.
Okay, can you explain that a little more? What's the problem with, you know, treating the whole internet like a physical public square?
Well, think about it. Public forums are usually places like parks or streets where
Yeah.
people have always gathered to share ideas, and the government can't really restrict speech in those places.
Yeah, because free speech is so important in those areas.
Exactly. But Alito was worried that if we say any restriction on internet access is like limiting free speech in a park, then that could make it really hard for lawmakers to do their job in the future.
So, like, if the internet is a public forum, could the government suddenly regulate things like hate speech or misinformation on social media? Could they restrict access to certain types of content?
That's exactly the kind of question that Packingham brings up. And Justice Alito was concerned that the majority opinion, you know, might have accidentally made it really difficult to regulate online spaces in any meaningful way.
I see. So we have these two different viewpoints. One that focuses on how important digital spaces are for free speech, and the other one that's more cautious about having a one-size-fits-all approach to regulating the internet. What does all this mean for lawmakers who are trying to create laws that protect people, especially kids in the digital age?
Well, Packingham definitely sends a message that these broad bans on internet access, they're probably not going to fly. They're unconstitutional. Lawmakers can't just erase someone's whole digital life without considering less restrictive options.
Okay, so what are some examples of those less restrictive approaches?
Instead of banning all social media for certain people, a state could focus on restricting specific behaviors, you know, like contacting minors or accessing certain websites that are known for child exploitation.
So basically target the actual harmful activity instead of the whole platform.
Right. And that's where things get tricky, and we're seeing lower courts struggling with these questions already. Packingham kind of raised the bar for justifying any online restriction. Lawmakers now have to really show a clear connection between the restriction and the harm they're trying to prevent. They can't just say, well, we think this might be harmful, and ban it.
So they need to show that they've thought about other less drastic options,
yeah,
and that this restriction is really necessary?
Exactly. And that's where Justice Alito's concerns about defining the entire internet as a public forum become super relevant.
Because if the whole internet is a public forum, wouldn't that make it much harder for lawmakers to regulate harmful content, even if it's targeted and narrowly tailored?
That's the heart of the debate. Packingham really highlights this constant tension between protecting free speech and keeping people safe online.
Right.
It forces us to ask some tough questions. Like, where do we draw the line between free speech and dangerous content?
Yeah.
How do we balance the need for rules with the risk of censorship?
Right.
And how do we make sure our legal systems can keep up with technology that's constantly changing?
Those are big questions. And it sounds like Packingham, while it gives us some guidance, also opens up a whole new set of challenges, both legal and ethical.
Yeah, it really feels like we're just scratching the surface here. You know, this case started with a Facebook post, but it's opened up so many questions. It has, and those questions are only going to get more complicated as technology keeps developing. Think about the metaverse, virtual reality, augmented reality, all that stuff. It blurs the lines between the physical and digital worlds even more.
Yeah, you're right. And that makes these legal questions about free speech and online access and government regulation even more important.
Exactly. We're in uncharted territory here, and Packingham v. North Carolina is one of the first big legal precedents trying to make sense of it all.
So if we kind of zoom out from the legal details for a second, what are the bigger takeaways from Packingham for, you know, regular people? What should our listeners be thinking about when it comes to their own online lives?
Well, I think one of the most important things to remember is that the internet isn't some lawless place. You know, the Constitution, including the First Amendment, it applies online just as much as it does offline.
That's a good point. Our digital rights are just as important as our physical rights. We can't just assume they're automatically protected.
Right. And it's not just about the government trying to censor us. We also have to think about these big tech companies, you know, the ones that control so much of what we see and do online.
Yeah.
They have the power to censor content, ban users, even change how information spreads. And that can have a huge impact on our lives.
It's like they become the gatekeepers of the digital public square.
Exactly. And that raises some big questions about transparency and accountability. How do we make sure these companies are using their power responsibly? And what can we do if they go too far?
Yeah, it seems like this whole debate about freedom versus safety, individual rights versus corporate power, it's only going to get more intense.
Oh, definitely. And that's why it's so important for everyone, not just lawyers and politicians, to be part of this conversation. We all need to understand our digital rights, be aware of the risks, and fight for policies that promote both freedom and safety online.
So what are some things our listeners can do to learn more and get involved?
First, stay informed. Read about these issues, follow what's happening legally, and pay attention to how technology is changing the world around us.
Don't just click agree on those terms of service without reading them right.
Exactly. Know what you're agreeing to and what rights you might be giving up.
Okay, what else?
Second, support organizations that are fighting for digital rights and freedoms. There are a lot of great groups out there working hard to protect our online privacy, promote free speech, and hold those big tech companies accountable.
That's great advice.
And finally, don't be afraid to speak up. Challenge censorship, call out injustice, and use your voice to advocate for a more open, fair, and democratic digital world.
I like that. Use your voice.
It's important to remember the future of the internet isn't set in stone. We're all creating it every day with the choices we make. So by being informed and engaged and speaking up, we can help make sure the internet stays a force for good in the world.
Well said. It's amazing how Packingham v. North Carolina started as a case about one guy's Facebook post, but it's really a story about all of us and the challenges we face in this increasingly complex digital world.
Absolutely.
Right.
It reminds us that the law is always trying to catch up with technology, and we all have a part to play in shaping how that happens.
Well, on that note, we're going to wrap up our deep dive into Packingham v. North Carolina. We hope you found it helpful, and we encourage you to keep exploring this fascinating and constantly changing intersection of law and tech. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for having me.